Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by PointsBet. Guys, it's finally here. Sports Drink and PointsBet have partnered up to bring you the world's greatest BTU-themed threads for the Bears season. Just imagine the blue and orange confetti cascading down from the rafters of State Farm Stadium while you're donning the greatest t-shirt known to man, a Bears Talk Underground t-shirt. And it's very simple. You got to go to sportsdrink.org/shirts, fill out the quick Google form, register for your PointsBet account, and deposit at least $10. That's all it's going to cost you if you want to get your hands on this t-shirt. And then finally, you upload your proof of deposit as well. Once you submit, our beautiful friends will have your shirt out the door and on the way to you. And once again, that is sportsdrink.org/shirts. Once again, sportsdrink.org/shirts. Guys, I'm in my 16th season doing this show. It's the first time I've had a shirt available for my podcast. I'm so proud to finally have one, and I want you to have it. So follow the steps and get yourself your very own Bears Talk Underground t-shirt today. And thank you to PointsBet for partnering up with Sports Drink. And thanks to PointsBet for sponsoring the podcast. What's up, guys? Happy Black Friday. Sorry for the slightly late episode drop. I was on my own for Thanksgiving this year, so I had to play all the roles. I was the cook, I was the cleaner, I was the guest, and I was the host all at the same time for the food that I was cooking, the food I was eating, the games I was watching, and before I knew it, it was like 1 a.m. and I hadn't even gotten started on the show yet. And I was exhausted. So I just went to bed, got up a little early here. It's about 5 to 8 in the morning on Friday. And we're attacking this thing so I can get it out for you guys. So, yeah, it's the biggest shopping day of the year, the day after Thanksgiving, which I will not be participating in. Maybe I'll try to see if I can get something on Amazon or something like that. But going out amongst the masses on this day, suicide. So I'm not doing it. So I got plenty of time to get this done today. So we'll go ahead and get it cranked out and get ready for the Bears Jets on Sunday. Last night was fun with the games. All three of them were pretty good. You know, the Bills and the Lions coming down to the wire, looking for a minute there like the Lions are going to pull this thing off. Dallas pulling away from the Giants at the last minute, and then, you know, the back and forth of Minnesota and New England. A lot of good football being played last night. So maybe there's going to be some good college games on today and tomorrow to get me primed for what could be an absolute massacre between the Bears and the Jets on Sunday because of our offensive line against their defensive line. So could be pretty grim, but later on in the show, Rivka Bort from Jets Factor, Jets X Factor, excuse me, will be joining us to preview Bears Jets, fill us in on you know, the Zach Wilson situation and how we got benched. I talked to Rivka on Wednesday afternoon, and it was like the news was about 2 hours old when we were recording the interview. The Jets made the announcement at like noon. And I was talking to Rivka at about 2 p.m. So still fresh on everybody, including the Jets fan I was talking to. Some interesting stuff coming out of that as well. So let's go ahead and get started. This is the Week 12 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out. News and Notes is going to be very injury report centric because that's pretty much all that's going on with the Bears right now. I mean, obviously, so, you know, Justin Fields in his shoulder situation was revealed on I believe, Monday that it was. I mean, there was actually a lot of conflicting rumors. He dislocated it. He didn't dislocate it. It's separated. It's an AC joint. It's this. It's that. And then finally on Wednesday, when Justin got in front of the media, Mr. Transparent said it's a separation with partially torn ligaments, which of course automatically knee jerk for me was like, okay, you're done. I'm not saying done for the season, but you're not playing this week, not against those animals with the Jets. I don't want you anywhere near those guys. So, I mean, not that it's going to be much easier against the Packers next Sunday, but I would rather have you, like, if you have to play, because Fields is such a competitor, everything is going according to plan as far as, like, if Fields is ready, he's going to play. And that's the, honestly, right here, right now, it's the last thing I want to hear. I do not want Justin Fields out there, you know, so fresh off the injury, going up against a defensive unit that specializes in getting home with four and possibly, you know, making it worse to the point where, like, you know, right now, partially torn ligaments, all right, maybe minor surgery, maybe rehabilitation, but, you know, kind of like think about like Jim McMahon back in 86. He was playing on a bad shoulder all season long, you know, and then that defender from the Packers grabs him around the waist, spikes him into the turf on that bad shoulder, done for the year, and like missed big chunks of 87 following that as well. You know, with everyone so optimistic about what could happen next year in 2023, the last thing I want is to have that derailed because Justin had to play in this meaningless game against the Jets. I don't want to see it. I mean, I wouldn't like it, but I wouldn't fault them for shutting him down for the year. I honestly wouldn't. We've seen the progress. Now we know what we need to do. We need to shore up that offensive line to protect him, maybe get him another weapon or two in the receiving game, maybe somebody out of the backfield. We'll talk about that here in just a minute, you know, and build that defense so that we have a more solid foundation in getting the ball back into our offense's hands. And we have currently 8 draft picks and 100 plus million in cap space to accomplish that. So I would err on the side of caution. We're thinking about the future here. 2022 is done. Even though the Bears are like on the outside fringe, they're not completely done yet as far as the playoff race is concerned because the NFC is such a weak conference this year. It's not worth it. It really is not worth it. So I would err on the side of caution and shut them down. The partially torn ligaments was the thing that put it over the top for me. But that's my great fear. You know, if he does play on Sunday, he gets caught up. He gets another one of those cheap shots that everyone keeps, you know, smacking him in his, you know, upper body with when he tries to slide and give himself up. And that's all she wrote. Not just for this year, but for a chunk of next year because he has to have surgery where they basically need to rebuild his goddamn shoulder. So I'm not okay with that. But, you know, they say if he can go, he's going to go. I'm not a fan. You know, obviously I'd love to see him play, but the price here would be too big, in my opinion. So, speaking of being done for the year, we found out on Wednesday Lucas Patrick will not be returning from IR. He's finished his 4-week stint on injured reserve. He was eligible to come back this week for week 12. Instead, it was revealed by Coach Eberflus that he'd had surgery on that bad toe or on his foot, you know, whichever, about 2 weeks into his stint, and he's done for the year. He is not coming back. So here we were holding out hope with Tevin Jenkins coming back. Riley Reiff is playing much better than Larry Borum is. Braxton Jones is doing his thing. Cody Whitehair there. We pluck Lucas Patrick into the middle of that, and we've got our best offensive line configuration of the season. We can, you know, put Sam Mustafa out to pasture. Instead, he's our guy for the rest of the year, whether we like it or not. So, yeah. Unfortunate news on that one, and his future with the team is actually in jeopardy. You know, he struggled at times. He was better at right guard than he was at left guard when he was playing for Cody Whitehair after he got hurt in the Giants game, And then he made it through, what, maybe half of the first quarter before he went down with the toe injury, and now he's done for the year. So, yeah. I mean, and he's not an expensive free agent. He's like 2 years, $4 million. That's a cap hit Ryan Poles would probably easily take to send him out after we, you know, draft or sign, you know, a replacement in free agency or in the draft. So, unfortunate news for Lucas Patrick, for the Bears, for our offensive line. Yeah, last thing I wanted to hear. Especially this week going up against this defensive line, the last thing I wanted to hear was the guy best suited for the center position isn't going to play the spot until 2023, maybe. So, bad news there. Real quick, before we get into the full injury report, one of the bigger stories coming out this week with, you know, Zach Wilson was his, I don't want to say refusal to take accountability, but that's basically how it came off, was on Sunday after the game against the Patriots. Beat writers and such asked him if he felt like he let his defense down. 77 yards passing, you know, through some, he was horrible in that game. His defense only gave up 3 points. The touchdown in the game was on special teams literally in the last few seconds of the game. So the defense put him in an excellent spot to win, and 6 points wins the game. You know, they held the Patriots to 3 points, just like the Patriots held them to three. And his answer was, no, I don't think I let my defense down. Versus the other news was Justin Fields scoring major points in the locker room after the Falcons game, apologizing to the defense for letting them down, you know, saying that you guys gave us a chance at the end of the game and we didn't come through. That's on me. I apologize. I'm going to work harder, you know, to be better. And, you know, so something like that doesn't happen again. And it's also rumored that, you know, guys like Eddie Jackson and such basically shut all that noise down as far as like, yeah, don't apologize to us, bro. It's like, we're on a 4-game streak where we're giving up more than 30 points a game every game. And, you know, it's like, it's not on you, man. This is a team thing, and we'll just keep working hard together and improve. It even angered Alan Williams, not so much in like the disrespect or anything like that, but the fact that he felt the need to apologize at all. Alan Williams was like, this kid has been nothing but amazing for us, especially in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and he's apologizing to the defense that he let them down. It's like, no, that's not how that works. So just the juxtaposition, two guys drafted in the 2021 draft, quarterbacks leading their team, one showing the prime example of what to do in order to get the team to rally around you, and the other one showing you exactly what not to do in a situation like that. So, you know, Wilson got benched that was Sunday night. Wilson got benched on Wednesday. And when you hear Rivka and I talk here in a few minutes, she'll mention it was like the 72-hour period from the end of the game until they announced his benching on Wednesday. Robert Saleh went through a roller coaster of emotions, essentially. Like, he spoke before Zach Wilson, before the game, and said that, you know, when the reporters asked him about Zach Wilson's status, he's our quarterback. You guys know that. You know better. You're like, why do you keep asking me? You know, kind of thing. Fast forward to Monday. Now it's, I'm not committing to Zach as our starter on Sunday. Tuesday was the day off. They come back on Wednesday. Zach Wilson is benched. Mike White is our quarterback. It's like, yeesh. That's from one extreme to the next. Like, what the hell's wrong with you guys? Why would I bench him? He's our quarterback, too. Here's our new quarterback, because that other guy was terrible. So, crazy 72-hour period for the Jets and for Zach Wilson and the coaching staff. So, wrapping things up here, one more rumor before we get to the injury report to close things out. It's an interesting what if to think about. It's a fun possibility to kind of play with in your mind, but I don't know if it's one worth pursuing when the time comes. And that is rumors of, I don't know if the rumor is that Saquon is interested in playing for the Bears, or if the Bears are, you know, maybe having inner discussions about going after Saquon Barkley in free agency, or whatever the situation may be. But the fact of the matter is, the Bears have the most cap space in the league. Saquon Barkley is going to be a free agent after this season, and he would be an amazing addition to our offense. The big concern is Saquon gets banged up. He had that amazing rookie season where he looked like the number two overall player, offensive rookie of the year, the whole nine yards. 2019, he's banged up the whole year. 2020 in Chicago. Well, 2020, actually, he had a sophomore slump kind of year. I don't remember if injuries were a factor in that. But week two, 2020, against the Bears in an empty Soldier Field, blows out his ACL, done for the year. And he spent all of 2021 in and out of the lineup, foot injuries, high ankle sprain, so on and so forth, before having an extremely powerful and effective season this year. A comeback season for the Giants. And I don't know if the Giants would spend the franchise tag on him and thus make him kind of cost effective out of the Bears, range on that one or whatever the case may be. But having him in the backfield with Justin Fields, I mean, that makes me warm and fuzzy all over just thinking about it. But it's like, can we trust Saquon Barkley to be the 2018 and the 2022 Saquon, where he's on the field and being effective and making, plays and doing damage to defenses and helping Justin Fields be everything that he can be? Or will it be 2020, 2021 Saquon, who's basically stealing money because he's on the injury report 80% of the time? It's like, that's a huge concern. And because Saquon is playing so well, he's not going to be cheap. And I know that money's not really going to be a factor for the Bears this year because they have that cap space. But, you have to spend, 12 to $15 million a season to get a Saquon Barkley, when we can be using that money to add depth to the secondary, sign a defensive tackle, a three technique guy, a pass rush, and the money could be better spent somewhere else when we can get David Montgomery cheaper and we've got Khalil Herbert coming back. So, and I also, our good friend Eric Lambert from Sports Mockery, I saw him do one of his mock off seasons where the Bears signed Tony Pollard away from the Cowboys at a fraction of what it would cost us to probably sign Saquon. And I would be all for that. I mean, even if it meant, sadly losing David Montgomery, that's a hell of a replacement. Tony Pollard's an outstanding running back. And, he might not be affordable for the Cowboys to bring back. So that's an interest. That's an intriguing one. And Tony Pollard doesn't have Saquon's injury history. So plus, he's cheaper, he's healthier. And, let him come in. And us and him getting paid won't cost as much as it would to pay Saquon. So, yeah, I mean, but it's an interesting rumor. It's an interesting what if. It's something that would probably, that basically gets every Bear fan excited just to think about it. But the risk versus the reward, I don't know if that makes it worth it, to be completely honest with you. So, fun to think about, though. And I'm sure it will be a, headline going into free agency and whatnot. But, I don't know. I'd have mixed feelings about it. If the Bears pulled it off and Saquon is a Bear next year or for the next 5 years or however the contract works out, it would be, cautious optimism. Like, man, that's fantastic. What a weapon we have now. But, oh, man, we really need to work on that offensive line so he's not trying to struggle and, all that kind of stuff with the, getting out of the backfield and he's got an injury history and all that kind of stuff. It would be a very guarded optimism throughout the season until the football season actually started and we could see that Saquon was going to be healthy for at least the first year of that contract. So, yeah. Whereas if I find out we signed Tony Pollard, I'm through the roof. That's outstanding. Sad that it means we don't get Montgomery back, but Montgomery would be more expensive than what Eric Lambert projected. Tony Pollard's like 3 years, $19 million. So like $6 million a year versus probably going to take 10 to 12 to get Montgomery to come back. So we'll see. We'll see. It's like I said, definitely an exciting thing to think about. Fun to play with the what ifs in that situation. So All right, wrapping it up here with the injury reports. As of yesterday on Thursday, Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, and Sterling Weatherford, defensive end, linebacker, have not practiced yet this week. They're in concussion protocol. Hopefully that turns on a dime today on Friday, and we can count on them to play. Speaking mainly of Brisker and Gordon, I think Weatherford's just a special teams guy. But, you know, that'd be a big hole in the secondary without those guys. But Dane Cruikshank, who's been nursing a hamstring injury for the last few weeks, has been full participation on Wednesday and Thursday, so he could possibly be a, you know, step in for Jaquan Brisker. And, yeah, probably a Kendall Vildor stepping in for Kyler Gordon or whatever. Justin Fields has been limited so far in practice with the shoulder injury, and Tevin Jenkins has been full go with the hip injury. So I'd anticipate we're going to get our best and meanest offensive linemen back on Sunday versus the Jets. So, yeah, looking forward to that. So there you have it, guys. News and notes delivered to you. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest, Riv Kabord from JetsXFactor.com, to help us preview Bears-Jets week number 12. Week number 12, after our beloved Chicago Bears fill their tummies with turkey and stuffing, head on out to, New Jersey, actually, to take on the New York Jets in MetLife, their second trip out to the stadium, having played and lost to the Giants week four earlier this year. And here to help us preview this very interesting, all of a sudden, matchup between the Bears and the Jets, from JetX Factor, it's Rivka Board. Rivka, with the tongue twister there, all those consonants and stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's very nice to be here.
Well, I gave you a heads up just before we got started, so I'm going to go ahead and ask you now. Every time we have somebody new on the show for the first time, we like to ask the same three questions, and those are, where are you from, where are you now, and what is your favorite memory as a fan of your beloved New York Jets?
Okay, well, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. New York Jets, New York. I actually live in Jersey right now, 10 minutes away from MetLife Stadium. Hop, skip, and a jump away. Born, bred, Jet fan all my life. My favorite memory, I don't think it's really that hard for any Jet fan. I'm in my late 20s. I don't think it's that difficult for any fan of that age to pinpoint it.
Sure.
2010... season 2011 was the actual year, but AFC divisional round, went into Foxborough and beat the Patriots 28-21, and that score really doesn't indicate how much the Jets outplayed the Patriots that day. By far the best memory. Everyone knows the Patriots playoff record.
Yeah.
At home, and specifically Jets were major underdogs that year, you know, second year under Rex Ryan, coming off an AFC championship loss to the Colts the previous year. And it sent them back to the AFC championship game for the second consecutive season. Highlight of that game was Santonio Holmes catching a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. It wasn't as good as his Super Bowl catch in 2008, but it was still up there. A very, very nice catch. And yeah, favorite memory, Braylon Edwards, doing backflipping his way into the AFC championship game.
There you
go.
Yeah, that's the Bart Scott can't wait game, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I remember is Bart Scott screaming that at Sal Palantonio on the sidelines of the game to in reference to they got the Steelers next week in the AFC championship game. Can't wait. Just right in his face.
Yes, like, and that, unfortunately, last week before the Patriots game, that was cited a lot. That and it was memed all over the place.
Yeah.
And then last week happened for the Jets.
Speaking of teams that weren't expected to get as far as they've gotten, I think that's what you guys have this year. I mean, I I I I I loved the draft and the talent and everything you guys acquired. All of your picks coming within the first four rounds because of all of the maneuvering that, you know, your general manager did. The three first round picks, you know, a high second rounder with Breece Hall and everything. He's got a lot of talent that you packed in to the draft, but I don't think anyone was expecting going into your bye week at 6-3, winning five out of your last six. I mean, it's been quite a, you know, crazy thing. Like, I think just people, because the Jets are the Jets, you know, forgive me for saying, but it's just wait, when is that reality thing going to kick in? And then you guys won four in a row right there at in the spot, beating some pretty good teams in the process.
Yeah, so coming into this season, I think the consensus among most Jets fans and analysts was that there was a significant talent boost, but that they were 1 year away.
Sure.
You know, looking at the schedule, I don't know how much traction this got in the national media, but certainly in New York, people were very aware of Brady Quinn saying before the season that the Jets could start 0-9 or 1-8. Just looking at their schedule, that was a very, you know, that's a very common thing that people put up to say, look at the Jets now. But most fans thought that if the Jets were 3-6 by their bye week, that they, you know, considering that the second half of the season looked like it was a softer schedule, right, that they could finish with 7 or 8 wins. That was the consensus. You know, you had people maybe a little more pessimistic said 6. You had a little more optimistic said 9. You had to be an extreme optimist to say even 10 wins this season. But for the most part, it was a lot of talent, as you mentioned, you know, three first round picks, a high second round pick, coming off of last year's draft, even though the biggest question was going to be the quarterback, the rest of the draft was actually quite a windfall in and of itself.
Right.
Elijah Moore in the second round, Michael Carter, the running back in the fourth round, Michael Carter, the cornerback in the fifth round. There was some real talent added to that. So people thought this team was going to show a lot more potential and be a lot more fun to watch. But the consensus was, you know, 2023 is really going to be the year. And to be 6-3 coming into the bye was, I mean, people were ecstatic thinking not just playoffs. Some people were thinking number one seed in the AFC, because they were really not that far away from it. A win over the Patriots probably would have put them at the number two or three seed.
Right. Right. I mean, especially to go into that bye with a win at home over Buffalo in dramatic fashion as well. I mean, you guys had to be riding pretty high going into the break.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when the Jets were 5-2 heading into the first New England game, the consensus was beat New England and then we'll go into the bye 6-3. Because even people who are very optimistic really didn't see much of a chance of the Jets beating Buffalo. Now, then they lost to New England the first time around. With Zach Wilson throwing three pretty awful picks. And the consensus was after that, oh, God, this is going to be terrible. The Jets are going to lose to Buffalo. We're going to go into the bye week. Yeah, we're 5-4. And, you know, no one expected us to even be this good at the bye.
Right.
But we've lost two in a row. We're heading into New England. You know, we've lost at that point 13 in a row to them. And, you know, and just everything was all doomsday. And then suddenly the Jets came out there and shocked everyone, beating the Bills. And it was, you know, the confidence level going into New England really rose once more. And people really looked at it and said, this team can make a serious run. If they can beat Buffalo, they can beat anyone.
Yeah, I mean, your defense is outstanding. I mean, I got to watch a good chunk of the Green Bay game, which was enjoyable as a Bear fan to watch you guys just kind of ram it down Green Bay's throat there. And then especially in the second half with the way Breece Hall was running the football, in the second half, had that touchdown run at the end that kind of put it away and everything. You know, it was old school defense and running the football while you're kind of waiting for Zach Wilson to kind of have that, you know, come to Jesus game that you're kind of still waiting for him to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that Packers game, honestly, was not a good game at all for Zach Wilson, but it was, you know, just the formula the Jets had used for most of this year to win, which was running game. You know, Breece Hall kind of really took the pressure off of Wilson because he was just an athletic freak and a beast. And, you know, he was doing exactly what the Jets had drafted him for, which was to just be a threat, a home run threat on any play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, in the games he played this season, he was averaging 5.8 yards per carry. Because he would break one, and it would seem like at least once or twice a game he would have, you know, his last few games he had, you know, major plays.
Yeah.
But the Jets defense, really, that's been their, you know, their springboard the entire season. Really, I don't say the entire season because the first few, they came out a little sluggish, but starting really from week four, they've just gotten better and better. And, you know, Quinnen Williams having an all pro season this year, 8 sacks, really showing exactly why he was a number 3 overall pick, finally putting it all together. Mm-hmm. The cornerbacks, obviously Sauce Gardner is a big name, but DJ Reed is having just almost as good of a year, probably could also be a Pro Bowler. Really, the heart and soul of the Jets defense is their defensive line and their cornerbacks specifically. And they've really carried the Jets. I mean, even last week, you look at the game, it was, you know, as poorly, I mean, the Jets gained 2 yards in the second half and lost 10-3.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching the condensed version, like the 11-minute mm-hmm. version that the NFL posts, for the highlights and everything. And it just seemed like every other play they were sacking Mac Jones.
And, yeah, 6 times.
Yeah, 6 sacks in the game. And when they weren't sacking him, they were harassing mm-hmm. him. And everything. And then the flip side, it's amazing that, you know, they can take a 3-hour game and condense it into 11 minutes of highlights. So you really got to look into it to get the context. And the context is these teams combined for 17 punts in that game on Sunday. 10 for the Jets, 7 for the Patriots. It's like, that is a lot of punts. I mean, when you're a punter and you need a shower in November, because, you know, it's cold outside, you still need a shower. That's how busy you were. That's bad football being played that day. Or good football, yeah, depending on how you're looking at it.
I mean, only a Jet fan and a Jet or Patriot fan and a lover of defense could handle that game.
Sure,
I think, honestly, I think the Patriots had mercy on NFL, on fans who were watching, you know, not named the Jets fans. Just for winning the game and not letting it go to the overtime to see some more putrid offensive football. But it was also crazy to have that kind of game in what was a 20 to 25 mile per hour wind. So you're trying to punt. And yeah, I mean, the Patriots missed 2 field goals in the game, and the wind had a tremendous impact on those kicks.
Yeah. And that's what I was noticing when I was watching the highlights, because you see 10-3 and the first touchdown wasn't scored until literally the last 5 seconds of the game on the punt return. I was like, it just must have been a mess of a defensive game, like mistakes or, you know, whatever. And then you see the highlights and it's like, oh no, New England missed 2 field goals in that game. They could have easily won this thing in regulation, especially with the way the offense was going for the Jets. 6 points wins them the game. So, I mean, it was interesting watching the highlights and kind of getting a grasp of how poorly things were going on offense for the Jets. And as a Jets fan, tell me, block in the back on that punt return or no?
You know, look, first of all, there were 2 blocks in the back. Okay. People noticed only the one that Dean Blandino highlighted, the one at the end. Patriots still would have had a 43-yard field goal. I'm not betting that Nick Folk would have missed the third one. But there was one right at the beginning of the play on Hardy, which actually is a testament to the fact that Hardy plays hard. Mm-hmm. He came down and he was blocked in the back right away when Jones caught the ball. And the return likely never would have happened if that had happened. But still, he was blocking the back. He was knocked down. And yet he was still down there at the 10, 15-yard line to try to make that last gasp tackle on Jones. But at the same time, I don't think, unlike other games this year where Jets fans have been very upset about various calls or non-calls, you know, every fan base is upset at officiating and thinks that the officials are targeting them. I don't think it really barely got any traction because people just recognized that this was all on the offense. You can blame the punt return at the end was almost incidental to the fact that it was just such a putrid game. Like you didn't hear a ton of talk about that compared to the discussion of just Zach Wilson.
Sure. Sure. And obviously, the breaking news of the day today is that, you know, less than 2 hours ago, it was announced that Zach Wilson has been benched for this game. I mean, obviously, he's coming off, which is saying a lot, his worst game of the season against the Patriots, because I have up here in front of me, and I'm looking at his passing totals, and his first game against the Steelers, it was 255 or 252, and then it goes down each week until the first New England game where he threw for 355 yards somehow, and then 154 against the Bills, and then 77 on Sunday against the Patriots the second time around. I mean, did the wind have much to do with that when you guys were going into it, or was it a crosswind that was, you know, it's like, did that have anything to do with his output for the game on Sunday? Did the
so he claimed the passing he game? Claimed it did, and his post-game presser, you know, the words that are making the headlines is that, you know, and that's going all around Twitter is that, you know, he was asked after the game if he feels that he let his defense down, and he said no. But besides that, you know, inexcusable response.
Oh yeah.
The other thing that he said two different times in that presser was that it was windy out there, and he mentioned, and he also said, you know, the Patriots weren't either throwing it downfield. Yeah. Mac Jones went 23 of 27 for 246 yards. That's 9.1 yards per attempt, Zach. So that doesn't really hold a candle. We're talking about noodle arm Mac Jones, who, you know, the biggest knock on him coming out on the draft, besides his lack of general athleticism, was that he just doesn't have the arm to be a top quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
And he averaged 9.1 yards per attempt. Yes, that was helped by really poor tackling on the Jets' part, but 9.1 yards per attempt, and Zach Wilson was at 3.5.
So going into this game, where did you sit on the whole Zach Wilson is holding the team back thing? Were you thinking that, you know, patience is the virtue, the defense is playing well, they're keeping us in games, we're running the football, even though the Breece Hall is down for the season, you know, we still have Michael Carter, we traded for James Robinson, we can still run the ball, we can still play defense, Zach Wilson will come along eventually? Or was it, we need to get Mike White or Joe Flacco in there to see if we can open up the passing game, or else it's going to, you know, be too little too late once we finally get around to it?
So prior to the prior to last week's game, the Patriots game, I was on the train of, you know, if he could play like he did against Buffalo, you know, you said 154 passing yards, but he actually played fairly well against the Bills. He was decisive. He got the ball out of his hands quickly. It was actually his average time to throw was 2.31 seconds, which was by far the fastest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made the correct read. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he did what he was asked to do. And I felt that if he could continue doing that, you know, just, you know, you say game manager, if he could continue playing like a game manager, you know, the Jets would be fine and they could, you know, afford to let him stay in and learn. After this Patriots game, you can't even say that anymore, because it's not just, it's very easy to think, you know, the Patriots have a great defense. You know, that's why Bill Belichick, notorious for confusing young quarterbacks. And that's definitely true. I'm not going to deny it.
Sure.
Belichick played all sorts of games with Zach Wilson's mind. I mean, he dropped defensive ends into coverage. He disguised his coverage constantly. He really did the opposite of what Wilson was expecting very often. But ultimately, you just watch, you know, I would tell any fan who wants to know what's going on with Zach Wilson, go take a look at the breakdowns that Dan Orlovsky and Kurt Warner did of Zach Wilson's game this past week. The two of them both, and they, you know, they had slightly different takes on certain things, but the overarching idea of what they both said was that Wilson is just reading simple plays wrong. Like, there's a, you know, you have a basic concept. This is the way quarterbacks are taught to read this play, and he's reading it the wrong way, regardless of what the defense is. This is the way you read this play. And the fact that you're seeing him, his eyes just completely, he has no idea where he's looking. That's really what tells you, you know, just you can't continue with a quarterback like that. With everything else, you know, the picks and the sacks and everything. Ultimately, the fact that he's just, his decision making and his processing is just not there right now. And it's really, really killing the Jets. And honestly, it was about to cause them, it looked like it was going to cause serious problems in their locker room.
Well, and I'm sure the zero accountability thing from the press conference was the straw that broke the camel's back. So, you know, it went from probably being like a whisper in the locker room to somebody going to the coach and be like, hey, man, we got to do something different here. We're in danger of losing the locker room if we don't do this.
So it's interesting to note that Robert Saleh in his post-game press conference, which was before Zach Wilson spoke, he said, you know, someone asked him if he thought about benching Zach, and Saleh responded, that's the furthest thing from my mind. You know, Zach's our quarterback. I've told you guys that. Then Zach gets up to the podium, says what he says, and then the next day, Saleh gets up there almost 2 hours late for his presser, which was very uncommon for Saleh. And then he says, you know, I'm not committing to Zach as our quarterback. And now 2 days later, you know, Zach is benched. So the obvious conclusion from that is that Zach's presser was the straw that broke the camel's back. Right. But I actually don't think so. If you watch the game, if you watch the actual game, you can see that several times throughout the game, various players on the Jets threw their hands up in frustration
at
Zach Wilson, whether it was Garrett Wilson over the middle. And Garrett Wilson is a very passionate young player, and he really, you know, he really gets into it for good and for bad. Like, when he makes mistakes, he's as hard on himself as anyone, but he really, he expects everyone else to be as into it as he was. And when Zach, you know, just horribly missed the throw, and it wasn't even necessarily to him, it was just the actual throw that he made, he missed badly. Wilson just threw his arms up, and you saw Denzel Mims do it, even though Mims has no business doing it, because he had a drop, a really bad drop on a good throw that Wilson made earlier in the game. You saw Dwayne Brown at one point, the left tackle, 37-year-old Dwayne Brown, a 38-year-old Dwayne Brown, who's playing on a torn rotator cuff. Literally, the guy could have just, you know, gone on IR, sat out the season, taken his money, retired. He's playing out there on a torn rotator cuff. And there was one play that Wilson, if he threw it out properly, would have probably had an easy touchdown, and he bailed and threw it away. And you see Brown throw his arms up. And when you see that kind of thing, I think that Saleh looked back at the film, because that's kind of what he said in his presser. Someone asked him what changed, and he said, you know, just being on the plane watching the film, he realized just how bad it was. Because it's one thing to watch a game on TV and think, you know, he had no one open, he was under pressure, you know, Bill Belichick, etc. There were guys open in this game. There were opportunities to be had. An average quarterback performance, and you score at least 17 to 20 points in this game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting, you know, with Mike White coming in as the starter, and Wilson's been demoted all the way to third string. Like, he's not even the backup. Flacco is, from what I understand, or what I've read online, is that, you know, Wilson isn't even the backup. He's all the way to third string on this one. And I saw Dan Orlovsky's breakdown showing the body language of Wilson's teammates, throwing the hands up, and, you know, I think it was Wilson. His hands went up and then they came down, you know, in frustration. You know, like, hands up, well, here I am, look at me, I'm over here, this is where the ball could have gone, and boom, throws his hands down in frustration and everything. It just, that's, especially for a guy, he got benched being 5-2 as a starter. You don't see that happen every day, that, you know, someone who's actually won more games than he's lost plays his way out of a starting spot on a team that's essentially into the plague of the season ended today. They're in the playoffs.
No, they're actually not. They because of tiebreakers, they were.
Oh, with the Bengals. That's right.
They lost to the Bengals. Bengals and the Patriots. So they, because of their all 6-4, because they lost the Bengals and the Patriots, this loss put the Jets in fourth place in the division on the outside looking in of the playoff picture.
Yeah. I mean, right there on the cuff, though. I mean, we still got seven games to go. You know, it's just kind of unheard of for it to happen this way. You know, it really had to be bad. And the coach, you know, and also, like you said, for Saleh to say immediately after the game, he's our quarterback, I don't know how many times I have to tell you, to 72 hours later, yeah, he's third string. And Mike White's going to start. Flacco's our backup, and we're going forward from here this way. You know, it had to be one hell of a 72-hour period for it to change so much so quickly.
Yeah, I you know, I think when it comes to Wilson, first of all, you know, people say 5-2. You know, you watch those games, you watch the highlights of those games. Wilson maybe won one of those games for the Jets, the Pittsburgh, the first game, where he came out in the fourth quarter and played like a real franchise quarterback. That's the only time this season that he has really looked like a franchise quarterback who can lead you to anything. They beat Green Bay on the back of their defense. They beat Denver on the back of their defense. They lost to the Patriots purely because of Wilson. So against Buffalo, Wilson did help them win that game. Although again, they rushed for 171 yards in the game. Mm-hmm. So, and their defense held Josh Allen to 17 points and picked him off twice. So, you know, again, they won. I don't want to say they won in spite of Wilson in that game. They won with Wilson, not because of him, but they won with him.
Sure.
He managed that game. But then, you know, just these five and two also belies the fact of just how bad those two were. And yes, again, it was against Bill Belichick, but nonetheless, both games, receivers running wide open left and right, throws that are just, you know, screen passes that are way, you know, airmailed over the receiver's head. I think Salah looked back and saw also Denzel Mims come wide open for a touchdown, easy touchdown on a play that's exactly where he should have been reading. The free safety comes down, you lob it up, you don't even have to get any mustard on it, it's an easy touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of those plays where, like, it wasn't just, you know, it was one thing against Green Bay where the Packers coverage actually did a very good job and there weren't that many opportunities, but in every other game this season, every single other game Wilson has played, there have been receivers open all over the place, and he just blows it. You know, you can blame the offensive line, and yes, the Jets offensive line is decimated. They were playing a third string guard and a second string tackle on one side and a third string tackle on the other side. And you can blame the running game, and yes, the running game didn't do the Jets any favors. And, you know, there have been games this season where specifically the two Patriots games where the running game was really stuck, but that running game was stuck because they can play at the line because they're not afraid of Zach Wilson beating them.
Right, exactly.
They play, the defense that the Patriots played was almost like to any other quarterback, that would be downright disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not afraid of being beaten deep at all. They don't care. Because they know that even if the guy is wide open, even if Wilson sees them, he's going to throw an inaccurate ball, which has happened. So the way Wilson played, like I'm fully supportive of the decision that Salah made. I think that he did the right thing. I think it was a courageous move and a recognition of the fact that it's one thing when your team, like last year, when your team is 4-13. And you don't have talent on the roster and everyone's injured and it's just a mess, to let your quarterback take his lumps in that time. Okay. I mean, although you can argue that maybe that's just such a bad place for a quarterback to develop that maybe they shouldn't be playing at all. And I actually would have made that argument, unlike other, you know, despite the whole rookie contract structure. But it's another thing when your team is playing at a, you know, and you see the talent all over the roster and you see the defense is a championship caliber defense. And you see that they have, even without Breece Hall, that they still have at wide receiver, they have weapon after weapon at tight end. I mean, Tyler Conklin could be a Pro Bowl candidate if Wilson just hit him when he was wide open. Sure. This season. Garrett Wilson would be a Pro Bowl candidate. And this really matters for a guy like, this has actually given Jets fans more sympathy for Elijah Moore, who just a few weeks ago was on everyone's, you know, he was in everyone's doghouse for requesting a trade when the team was 5-2. And then now everyone's looking at him and saying, you know what? Wilson really is costing people money because, for example, for Garrett Wilson, a first round pick, their fifth year option is tied to Pro Bowl and all pro selections. They make a lot more money if they make a Pro Bowl.
Sure.
Garrett Wilson would be easily in the Pro Bowl if the quarterback just got him the ball when he was open. Like, wide open.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's at some point you have to look at it and say, is it about the one guy or is it about the rest of the team?
So let me ask you, in today's NFL, and this is an NFL where, you know, say a few years ago in 2018, the Cardinals draft a quarterback in the first round in Josh Rosen. And then a year later, when they have the number one pick, brand new head coach wants to bring in his own guy. They take Kyler Murray to essentially replace Josh Rosen, who got, you know, less than a year as the starting quarterback. Is Zach Wilson done with the Jets? Will they be looking to move on, maybe bring in a veteran to go along with all the other young talent in there? Or is this just a bump in the road for him?
So according to Salah, this is not the end of the road for him. I mean, he was pretty clear in his press conference today saying this is not the nail in the coffin. I do intend to start him again this year. And basically what he said is that Wilson right now, he needs to go back to the fundamentals and kind of, you know, get his footwork right and then that they'll start him again. In my personal opinion, I don't see, you know, just with the horrendous footwork that we've seen from Wilson, I don't see how you can possibly fix that in enough to get it back into the lineup at, for, you know, for seven remaining games. And then come the off season, I'm almost certain that this move means that at the bare minimum, they're going to try to bring in a veteran to seriously push Wilson, if not outright name him the starter.
Sure.
You know, the Jets, you know, for better or for worse, they're good enough right now that they're not going to be able to draft, you know, a top quarterback. Is it possible that they also draft, you know, a project in the second or third round? It's possible. You know, you would have to look more at their needs. The Jets do have other needs on their roster, so maybe not. It's possible, though, that they do try to do that also. But at the bare minimum, you know, and the guy that makes the most sense that comes to mind that actually when Wilson originally got hurt in preseason, people were clamoring for is Jimmy Garoppolo, who, sure, you know, Robert Saleh, Michael Floor, offensive coordinator, come from San Francisco, very familiar with Garoppolo. Garoppolo looked great on Monday Night Football, you know, again, has, you know, the 49ers competitive, even though you say what you want about Jimmy G's limitations, but he can get the ball to a receiver who's open.
Yeah, and funny thing, the guy wins.
Exactly. Wins. I mean, you can give credit to Kyle Shanahan for it. You can give credit to anyone. But ultimately, Jimmy G has won. And also the thing is, the Jets run the same or very similar system to what San Francisco does. And they have maybe not quite the same level of talent, but close. I mean, you know, they have 3 to 4 really good receivers. You know, coming next year, Breece Hall will be back. You know, they have a running back who looked to be on the fringe of elite, obviously coming back from an ACL tear, you never know what they're going to look like.
Sure.
But even Michael Carter definitely has talent. You have, you have two tight ends that really both of them can catch balls. You have a lot on this Jets roster. There are a lot of pieces in place for Jimmy G to be able to slide right into the Jets and have similar success.
Sure.
So, you know, it's really the move that makes the most sense. Jimmy G is a free agent. He also has a no tag clause in his contract, so the 49ers couldn't franchise tag him even if they wanted to, although I doubt they would want to. You know, he makes the most sense as a you know, an option for sure for next year, whether you see him as a stopgap or whatever it is. I strongly believe that that's what the Jets will do. Whether they ever give Wilson another chance, you know, that I can't say for sure. I'm going to guess that Joe Douglas, the Jets GM, is going to move on. He may still be on the roster next year, Wilson, but I'm guessing that this is really going to be it.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by PointsBet. Guys, it's finally here. Sports Drink and PointsBet have partnered up to bring you the world's greatest BTU themed threads for the Bears season. Just imagine the blue and orange confetti cascading down from the rafters of State Farm Stadium while you're donning the greatest t-shirt known to man. A Bears Talk Underground t-shirt. And it's very simple. You got to go to sportsdrink.org/shirts, fill out the quick Google form, register for your PointsBet account, and deposit at least $10. That's all it's going to cost you if you want to get your hands on this t-shirt. And then finally, you upload your proof of deposit as well. Once you submit, our beautiful friends will have your shirt out the door and on the way to you. And once again, that is sportsdrink.org/shirts. Once again, sportsdrink.org/shirts. Guys, I'm in my 16th season doing this show. It's the first time I've had a shirt available for my podcast. I'm so proud to finally have one, and I want you to have it. So follow the steps and get yourself your very own Bears Talk Underground t-shirt today. And thank you to PointsBet for partnering up with Sports Drink, and thanks to PointsBet for sponsoring the podcast. Yeah, because after the Bears, you got a few bumpy weeks with on the road at Minnesota, the rematch at Buffalo this time. The Lions is a winnable game, but they are a tough out. They'll fight you kicking and screaming. And you got Jacksonville, Seattle on the road. That'll be tough. And then you finish at home on the road with Miami. So it does get a little bit bumpier as the road goes along, because Detroit's playing better football than people thought they would. Seattle is a first place team, or tied for first place in the NFC West. No one thought they'd be anywhere near first place this year, and they're playing out of their minds right now. You got the rematch with Buffalo, the rematch with Miami, and Minnesota, you know, currently an 8-2 football team. You know, the back half of the schedule is going to get rough after this game against the Bears.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think part of the reason why coming into the season, people thought that the second half of the season was softer was because of the Lions and Seahawks on that schedule. Sure. Obviously, you know, I know Bears fans not going to like this, but Chicago definitely was seen as a soft one.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah. I mean, Jacksonville's still seen as soft, although it's also seen as a potential draft game. But, you know, they're definitely, you know, with Seattle playing as well as they have, and Minnesota playing as well as they have, you know, notwithstanding their terrible loss on Sunday.
Right.
You know, the schedule does get rough. The one thing about the Jets is they're less worried about teams with great offenses only because of how well their defense has played.
Sure.
So, for example, looking at Seattle, And Seattle's going to be tough, no question about it. Geno Smith is playing at a very high level this season, and I don't believe it's a fluke. At the same time, the Jets have already stopped several teams with significant talent at the skill positions and a quarterback who's playing well. I mean, sure. Most notably in Buffalo or against Buffalo. So the belief that same thing with the Lions, high flying offenses do not scare the Jets as much, particularly if the quarterback isn't a running quarterback, which we'll get back to with Chicago. But the Jets definitely would believe, and a fan has every reason to believe, that the Jets will be able to contain those offenses. The bigger question would be what the defenses are like, because the Jets thus far have actually, Zach Wilson has faced the toughest schedule in terms of passing defenses in the entire NFL. So he's faced, you know, Buffalo, New England, which is right now top in the NFL in defensive DVOA, which just assesses different things compared to, you know, adjusted for opponents. So New England has the best pass defense in the NFL. Buffalo has one of the best. Denver has one of the best. You know, the Jets have faced a number of tough pass defenses. Actually, coming in the next seven games, the Jets face one of the weakest pass defense get slate in the NFL, which makes it, you know, on the one hand, it's like maybe play Wilson and see how he plays against worse passing defenses. On the other hand, it's like maybe play Mike White and say, you know, against softer pass defenses, they can still make something happen with their playmakers.
Sure.
So, you know, they're obviously the schedule doesn't look easy. Mm-hmm. Losing to New England was a really, really, really bad. It was just a really bad game to lose all around, for tiebreaker purposes, for division purposes, for everything else. But, you know, these games are winnable games, you know, maybe you could say Buffalo, and obviously most likely they won't be missing Jordan Poyer in that game and Matt Milano, who are both out. You know, they're best linebacker, you know, one of the best coverage linebackers in the league and one of the best safeties in the league. And also playing Miami with Tua Tagovailoa, they were playing the third string quarterback in that game. Those are going to be tough, no question about it. But this defense gives them a chance to win anything. The biggest issue is just really the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting that you know, following the Jets this year, because I do an NFL show as well. So I have been a little bit more tuned in to the league as a whole lately than I have been in the last few years. And, you know, like I said, everyone looking through the lens of 2021 coming into this season, not expecting much from the Jets, maybe something along the lines of the Bears, where you'll see an uptick in effort, you'll see, you know, flashes and bright spots, but ultimately you aren't going to get a lot of wins. Instead, because the defense has come on so strong and this young infusion of talent is playing well, or was, and especially when Breece Hall was still playing, you've actually turned a lot of those games into wins and are, you know, on track right now to make it to the playoffs if you can put something decent together in these last seven games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting to see it that way. To be fair, if you look at the first half of the Jets schedule, several of the teams that were considered, you know, very tough games for the Jets, those teams have underachieved pretty significantly. So specifically Denver and Green Bay.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at it before the season and said, no way are the Jets going to win those games in Denver and Green Bay. you know, and I was one of those people who thought Denver might underachieve. I still thought that there was no way the Jets were going to beat them. But both of those teams have underachieved. So that is part of the reason that the Jets, you know, are as, you know, ended up as good as they are. I don't want to undersell that.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the same token, they're definitely, they're not, I'm saying they have the opportunity. This is coming on quicker than expected, and you couldn't just let the quarterback tank the season.
Yeah. And with those last seven games, it's like, where do you bring Zach Wilson back in? I mean, is that up to Zach Wilson? Like, getting his, you know what, together while he's playing third string and running the scout team and everything, taking his lumps, you know, sitting in the corner, like Daddy said, or, you know, is there a good, because looking at these games, like maybe Detroit, Jacksonville, those are definitely winnable games that he could come in and, you know, maybe do something. But it's like, if Mike White comes out and he plays well, it's like, do you mess with that at all?
Yeah. So that someone actually, I think asked, they asked Saleh or LaFleur kind of about that. Like, how can you take Mike White out if he's playing well? I think the question was deflected, if I recall correctly, with some generic pat answer. But I legitimately believe in this case that the answer is, if Mike White plays well, they will not go back to Zach. Last year, it was interesting because when Wilson got hurt and Mike White had a great game against Cincinnati, and the Jets upset the Bengals, everyone was saying, you know, leave White in, quarterback controversy, things like that. And then White came back down to earth through, you know, through four picks in a game against Buffalo, and everyone kind of quieted down. I don't think that would be the case this year. I think that if White even has, you know, a strong game, I think they will ride him, because it would kill the morale of the team to go back to Zach Wilson if they have a quarterback who's playing well. And people like Mike White. That's the thing also. In the Jets locker room, people like Mike White. People like Joe Flacco. There's a lot of evidence of that. You know, I'm not saying people don't like Zach, you know, but it's not maybe as overtly obvious. With Mike White, they rally around him. They like the guy. And so if he's playing well, even if it means he's playing well because he's dumping the ball off like he did against Cincinnati last year, that's more than Zach Wilson can say, because he has not hit his open dump off 2 yards down the field.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting scenario. So let's talk about this game on Sunday. Right now, I think the Bears are playing chicken with Justin Fields. At least I hope they're not going to employ the plan that they basically just tried to sell everybody in their pressers earlier this afternoon, by basically saying, if Justin Fields is ready to go on Sunday, Justin Fields is going to play. Now, that would be fine if we weren't playing the Jets after they just got done running through New England to sack, Mac Jones six times, constantly in his face. I mean, I saw at least two or three plays where, you know, they stuffed third and one, 3 yards deep in the backfield, kind of thing. It's like their defensive line is monsters, and our offensive line is not, you know, especially if our main monster, Tevin Jenkins, doesn't play, we just get that much worse, you know. And now it's like our weakness is in the middle of the offensive line instead of, you know, being challenged on the outside edge and everything. It's just like, I don't want Justin Fields going up against the Jets if he's not 100%, and he's not 100% right now. He said himself, I just saw the bulletin come across on my phone, he separated his shoulder. It's an AC joint injury. It wasn't a dislocation, and, you know, those things take time to heal. And I don't want him toughing it out on a 3-8 team against one of the better defensive lines we're going to face all season. So I'm hoping that the Bears are just, you know, making the Jets plan and game plan for Justin Fields while we're getting Trevor Siemian ready to play a completely different kind of offense against you guys on Sunday.
You know, well, I guess we're hoping for the same thing. Albeit, you know, maybe for slightly different reasons. Do want to save Fields. I just would rather even not see, a not 100% Justin Fields, because if there's one thing the Jets do struggle with from time to time, it's running quarterbacks. They did a good job of containing Lamar Jackson in the opening week, but Josh Allen had a really good first half against them, including a 36-yard touchdown run where he was basically untouched. And we even saw in the first Jets-Patriots matchup, Mac Jones had several runs right up the middle against them. The Jets aren't, because of their natural, their defensive philosophy is to be very aggressive. They don't always contain so well. So I would rather not see Justin Fields play as well, as much as, this Jets pass rush is great. If Fields takes off, the defensive line probably won't be able to catch up to him. And, you don't have to have a fully healthy shoulder to be able to run the ball.
Right. But the other concern is that we are 11 weeks into the season. The Bears haven't had their bye yet. And defenders don't have a problem torpedoing Justin Fields when he gives himself up to slide, because the refs just flat out will not call it. Nobody is easing up on Justin Fields when he slides, and they're just torpedo right into him. And yeah, his teammates, rush the guy and like, dude, what is your problem? They get in his face, that kind of thing. But there's no flag. And I don't want Justin Fields taking hits even when he's giving himself up and the defender, pretends he can't slow down and runs right through the quarterback and doesn't get the flag, but he got the hit on our defenseless quarterback and everything. I'm thinking 2023 and beyond. I don't really care about the rest of the season. We're 3-8 right now. We've seen Justin Fields progress this season. I'm not saying we shut him down for the whole year, but I'm saying the next 2 weeks. We got the Jets this week. We got the Packers next week. Then we finally have the bye week 14. Let him come back after the bye, if he has to come back at all this year. And I certainly don't want him playing against the Jets, because even when he runs, he's still in danger.
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying that I think it would be responsible to play Fields. I'm just saying that I'm not necessarily the most objective when it comes to that, because I'd prefer to see Fields not play. Also, a very interesting just nugget, Trevor Siemian actually led to, it was the Jets cutting Trevor Siemian that led to Mike White coming to the team, because they got rid of Trevor Siemian to replace him with Mike White.
There you go.
So the Jets are very familiar with Trevor Siemian, what he can do, and more importantly, what he cannot do.
Yeah.
So, we saw him come in after Sam Darnold got hurt in I think it was 2019. So we're not, I don't think the Jets are overly concerned about Trevor Siemian. They'll prepare for Justin Fields and prepare for the receivers, but I don't think they would be, too worried about planning for Siemian.
Right.
So as a fan, I'd definitely rather see Trevor Siemian, but as a Bears fan, absolutely. I totally understand it. And what you're saying about the refs not calling it, we've seen it with the Jets and Zach Wilson, where Wilson has gotten, hit in the face, all sorts of things, and plays that the Jets defensive players have been called for roughing the passer and for late hits. They do it to Zach Wilson. Nothing gets called. I don't, with Fields, I'm a little more surprised, only because he's had success more recently, and that tends to start turning the tide towards the NFL wanting to protect its, its star players. And Fields has been certainly very exciting and drawing a lot of attention, fan attention and, fantasy and all that. He's certainly making the NFL a lot of revenue. You think that they'd be more careful about protecting him. But I'm assuming that defenses know this. They see that which quarterbacks are flagged, you're flagged for hitting them, and which ones are not. And if you're not flagged, they're going to keep doing it. Again, as I said, the Jets are an aggressive defense. They, Quincy Williams, certainly, although I think he was limited in practice today, their linebacker, he is not afraid to lay a thump on anyone. CJ Mosley, linebacker, hard hitter. They definitely would be going after Fields with the intention of separating him from his senses if they can.
Yeah. I mean, in his rookie season last year, it's like you'd see people taking liberties, A, because it wasn't getting called, and B, because his teammates weren't doing anything about it. Nobody was getting in that guy's face if he hit Justin Fields or took a shot at Andy Dalton, last year and all that kind of stuff. Well, the mentality there has changed. Not only, it was Tevin Jenkins or nobody that was doing it last year. And not only is it Tevin Jenkins, it's also everybody else, within arm's reach of the guy, letting him know that won't stand on the field, even though the referees didn't flag it. So we've taken care of one part of the twofold problem. Now we just need the referees to catch up. And when our quarterback gets blasted, when he's giving himself up, that flag's got to fly. you know, but we're still working on trying to get the referees to recognize that. It's a long and frustrating process trying to get them to I mean, it happened just this past Sunday against the Falcons. You know, late in the third quarter, Justin Fields gets tangled up. He's down on a knee and then gets blasted in the face by charging linebacker. That would be roughing for almost every quarterback else in the league, except maybe Zach Wilson, of course, and no flag. No flag. You know, if we'd have done it to Mariota, I mean, Kyler Gordon grabbed Mariota around the ankles when he came in on a blitz. Like he was falling down as he was coming through the line of scrimmage. So he got flagged for going low on the quarterback when all he did was kind of like lasso himself around his legs. He didn't cut him off at the knees. He literally used his one leg as a, you know, as an axis and kind of swung around, grabbed his other leg and to kind of bring him down. He got flagged for that. Justin Fields gets torpedoed under the chin, no flag. So
we've seen a lot of that with the Jets. Also, the Jets getting called for roughing the passer. Very, you know, I mean, at least as of a couple of weeks ago, the Jets had been the most flagged team in a league for roughing the passer, even though roughing those penalties are down by 50% from last year. I think that around the league, it's become more of a recognition that the issue is the uneven administration of the rule.
Sure.
You know, and with the late hit calls also, I see them not just in Jet games. I see them all over the place. I mean, in the first Patriot game, CJ Mosley was flagged for hitting Mac Jones when Jones was trying to turn off field for the first down, and Mosley hit him with his shoulder to the shoulder to prevent him from getting a first down. And they called it because they said Jones had given himself up. Like, no, he didn't. He was trying to get the first down. He was a half a yard short because of Mosley's hit. So these kinds of things do go both ways. Unfortunately, yes, as a fan, you definitely see when your quarterback is not protected. Also, the thing I would think about is that Fields, like Wilson, is not necessarily a huge guy, like a little bit slighter from what I could tell. And, you know, those hits really add up on that kind of guy. You know, one of the things about Josh Allen is, as much as Bills fans keep wishing that he would just slide and not throw his body into harm's way, you know, 6'6", 237, you know, it takes a lot more maybe to bring that down. But when you're 6'2", 220 or 6'2", 215, like, you know, I think Wilson is, and I'm pretty sure Fields is in the similar range, it adds up. We saw, you know, RG3 kind of his career get ruined by that kind of hit. And I would, you know, you would definitely hope that the refs would be more fair in administrating their things. Like you saw, I think it was last week was it Sunday night, where it was one of these games where Justin Herbert was hit, and they not only flagged the guy who hit him, they ejected him on what was a pretty tic-tac call. You know, so what works for Justin Herbert should work for Justin Fields also, should work for Zach Wilson also. It's the quarterback is the quarterback.
Right. I agree. So if the Bears are going to have a shot on Sunday, what do we need to do? Regardless of who our quarterback is, what should the strategy be? How do we attack this Jets defense to kind of, you know, neutralize, contain, whatever word you want to use, that defensive line so that we can be successful doing what we try to do?
So I'll tell you a few things, and sometimes I'm surprised that teams don't do it more often, because it's really a lot of the things you saw the Patriots do in both games, but especially this past week. First of all, I was looking up David Montgomery's numbers. I'm assuming he's going to be the starter once since Herbert got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at his numbers. He averages he's still one of the tops in the league. Herbert was even better, but still one of the, you know, towards the top of the league in yards after contact per attempt. The Jets, if there's one of the biggest Achilles heels of the Jets team, is their tackling. So if you can get him just one-on-one with a linebacker or a safety, find a way to do that, there's a good chance he's breaking the tackle. Sure. And you know, we saw it with Ramondre Stevenson, although not as much in the run game this past week. You saw it more in the passing game. But you get your running back in one-on-one, and obviously it's easier said than done. But getting him one-on-one with a linebacker would definitely work out. But as I said, Ramondre Stevenson out of the backfield, the Jets statistically have not been so bad against running backs out of the backfield this year, but that's partially because teams haven't done it so often. Stevenson really hurt the Jets significantly in the first matchup. I think he had 7 catches for 72 yards. He hurt them significantly by just catching the ball and making the guy miss. And the Jets tackling against New England in both games was putrid. And if you want to do that, I would just dump it off the running back. That neutralizes the pass rush and it gets your guy in space. Even their corners, as good as their corners are, their corners miss tackles too from time to time. So that would be one big feature of the game plan. The second thing I would do is I don't remember precisely how, if Simeon is mobile at all, but even non-mobile quarterbacks can run right down the middle when there's space. Mm-hmm. The Jets play more man coverage this year than they have in the past because of their corners, specifically Sauce Gardner. They man him up. They might even man him up when they play, they have a med call, man everywhere he goes, where they man him up, and even if they're playing a zone elsewhere. And, you take advantage of that. If there's space and, the Jets stunt a lot, their front four are very aggressive. You let them run past you and you run up the middle. There's space. There is space there. Mac Jones made them pay for it in the first game. You don't expect it as much from a less mobile quarterback. So I'm going to say take what's in front of you in that thing. The other thing is I was looking up Darnell Mooney's stats. And from what I see, he's actually pretty good with contested catches. Mm-hmm. As much as, let's say, Sauce Gardner is excellent at breaking up passes, and he really is one of the best in the league at that. He has a higher forced incompletion rate than any other cornerback. If you can get Mooney isolated, for example, in the slot on Michael Carter, Carter's only 5'9", and he's a good slot corner. He really is. But you can get him isolated and try to, throw it up there. Try to get him to, even if it's a contested ball. Mooney, if he has the hands for it, you might try to do that too.
All right. I like it. Get the ball out fast.
One other thing, though, also. Cole Kmet. I'm assuming he's... I was looking at it. He played on Sunday, right? He's good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's all good.
He's good to go. So the Jets don't cover tight ends that great because their linebackers are not that great in coverage. So that's another thing. Kmet, I see, has 5 touchdowns, has a nice chunk of yards this season.
Yeah.
Feature him.
Yeah, 5 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive. He didn't have any for 30 games from like the end of 2020, zero in all of 2021, and didn't have his first one until the Cowboys game, week 7, week 8, whenever that was. And then he caught 2 more against the Dolphins, 2 more against the Lions before he got blanked on Sunday against the Falcons as far as the end zone. But he made a crazy, like, one-handed Odell Beckham catch down the seam that set up a field goal for us. So, I mean, he's been quite the contributor ever since we had our mini bye after the Thursday night game against Washington. So he's kind of had a second half of the season type renaissance as far as, like, he went from not having caught a touchdown pass in 30 games to like almost immediately jumping into like the top of the tight end rankings as far as catching touchdown passes. He went from 0 to 5 in 3 weeks. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been, and as they always say, tight end's a quarterback's best friend. So mm-hmm. we'll look for Cole Kmet. We'll dump it to David Montgomery out of the backfield. He's got excellent hands and everything, and get the ball out fast to Mooney across the middle. And maybe we'll do some things against this Jet defense.
Absolutely. Now, one of the biggest things with the Jets defense is that they're excellent in bend but don't break. They really do a very good job. Like, they allow yardage between the 20s. But they also stop. They really stop you. The Jets, honestly, I think they average on drives that did not start in Jets territory this season. They're, if you take out the drives that started in Jets territory and largely like in field goal range, they're averaging, they give up 13.6 points per game. Even in the first Patriots game, the Patriots got 22 points. Of those, 9 of them came on drives that already started in field goal range. So. The Jets really, they're very good at, they'll give you soft yardage in the middle, but they'll knuckle down in the end zone. So Kmet would be important in that range.
All right. So Mike White versus Trevor Siemian, possibly. How do you see this one going down?
Look, as a Jets fan, it's always easy to be optimistic before, from the outside looking in. You get closer to the game. I think as any fan, you get nervous that things are going to go wrong. Honestly, just even with Mike White in there, I think the Jets are really just too talented for Chicago to handle. So unless Field plays and runs off for another 180 yards, I see this one going the Jets' way. I do think it'll be closer than, I think the line, I don't know what the line is now. It opened at 5.5 for the Jets. I don't know if I'm going to say the Jets are not going to cover that, but I would suspect that the game will not be a 27-10 blowout. I would suspect it'll be within a touchdown.
I think it all comes down to how it goes down in the trenches. The Bears have one of the weakest pass rushes in the NFL. If we continue to not be able to generate pressure, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. I mean, that's why until that presser where he didn't take any accountability for his performance, thought that, you know, the Bears might be Zach Wilson's last chance because our weak pass rush would allow him the time to be able to read the field, maybe find his open receivers and what have you. And then on the flip side, you know, our offensive line does a really great impression of Swiss cheese when it comes to pass protection. Run blocking, we're the number one rushed offense in the entire NFL. Pass blocking, we are absolutely the worst, and it shows every time. You know, the Falcons had a weak pass rush going into last week's game, 4 sacks in the first 3 quarters of the ball game. So it's like we're with a defensive line that was struggling. You guys are not struggling at all as far as creating pressure, getting to the quarterback. You guys are getting home with 4. You know, it's like I could see a blowout. I definitely could, especially if we can't protect the quarterback, regardless of who it is. And if it's Trevor Siemian, probably going to throw more than we're going to run as far as that goes. And I don't know how that shakes out. But either way, I was picking the Jets, even if Justin Fields play. Like we're just getting, you know, we just can't protect him. So and you can't throw passes when you're on your back 80% of the time.
Oh, absolutely. So. And the other thing I'm going to point out, you said about the Bears pass rush. One of the reasons that the Jets like Mike White is that he gets the ball out of his hands pretty quickly. His time to throw last season, his average time to throw among quarterbacks at least 100 attempts was fifth fastest in the NFL at 2.52 seconds. Zach Wilson average is like this one of the slowest in the leagues at like 3.2 seconds. So
which is an eternity.
For a quarterback, I mean, yeah. You know, they usually divide like 2.5 seconds as like, you know, under 2.5 seconds is considered, really getting out the ball out of your hand very fast. Tom Brady always leads the NFL or is one of the tops in getting the ball out quickly. Tua Tagovailoa gets it out quickly. Mike White last year got it out very quickly. And that's one thing the Jets need because the Jets are playing a threadbare offensive line. Although they hope to get their guard back, Nate Herbig, this game. Max Mitchell is practicing their tackle. So, you know, we don't know what it's going to be for Sunday. They just opened the 3-week window to come back from injury reserve for George Stant, another tackle. But still, they've been playing third stringers like across the offensive line. The only guys who stayed healthy were their center and left guard, and the left guard has been horrific, like in Tomlinson. But getting the ball out of your hands quickly, and the Jets have playmakers still.
Yeah,
Garrett Wilson with the ball in his hands is dynamic. Elijah Moore, as much as he hasn't done much this season, is very slippery with the ball in his hands. Braxton Berrios, even Michael Carter. These are guys who you dump it off to them and they can take it, 20, 30, 40 yards. So that's just another thing to watch out for is besides the lack of pass rush is that even if this may potentially be a get right game for a pass rush that's struggling, you know, that the quick release and you're just getting rid of the ball quickly might neutralize that.
There you have it. So good information, good talk. Rivka, appreciate you, stepping in for Mike Nania, who had Thanksgiving obligations like most of us do. But I appreciate you stepping in. Where can we keep up with you online, see your stuff and things like that?
So you guys are gonna laugh, but I actually never had a Twitter account. So even though people are leaving Twitter, I actually do not have a Twitter account. The main place that you can catch me is on JetsXFactor.com. I put out articles at least a few times a week. A lot of them are, pretty in-depth analytics articles on the Jets and things like that. So you'll probably catch either from me or from Michael Nania something about the Jets' biggest advantages and disadvantages against the Bears. If you want to know more about, you're a Bears fan, you want to know more about this, what the Jets are thinking, and maybe possibly how you guys can beat us, come check it out. And that's really where most of my stuff is.
Yeah, I noticed that when Mike told me about you, I started searching for you on Twitter, and I was like, yeah.
You can only find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is pretty, I have a LinkedIn account, but yeah.
Pretty unique name you got there, so it's not exactly like there's 1,000 Rivka boards you know, on Twitter.
Yeah, you Google me, I'll show up.
Right.
But not on Twitter.
Not on Twitter. It's like, well, here's her email address. Like, oh, thank God. So I can reach out to her. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how we were able to hook up. So I appreciate you hanging out with us, and good luck on Sunday. Enjoy the holiday tomorrow on Thursday. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and definitely, you know, best of luck to you. I hope Justin Fields doesn't get killed, because he's more important to you for the long term than just for Sunday.
Yeah.
And best of luck on the rest of the season.
Amen. Thank you. As always, want to thank my guest, Rivka Board from Jets X Factor. It's quite a little tongue twister. For joining us and stepping in for Michael Nania, who is our regular, quote-unquote, Jets guy. Had a lot of fun talking to her. Great insight on, you know, the Jets, and especially with the dramatic situation that they've had this week with their quarterback and Zach Wilson. What it could mean for the future and all that kind of stuff. Not only to mention what it could mean for this game on Sunday. Now we move on, wrapping this bad boy up, keys to the game, and I'm going to keep mentioning it until they actually do it. They did a better job of it against Atlanta, but still, when it came time to hurt the Bears, where did it happen? In the middle of the field. And I figure that's probably going to be a bigger issue this week, especially in the running game with Michael Carter and James Robinson coming out of the backfield. With Mike White not being as athletic as Zach Wilson, probably more prone for those quick slants across the middle to get the ball out of his hands and so on. So the middle of the field, which has been vulnerable for the Bears all season long, it's going to be a point of emphasis for the Jets probably as far as moving the football, and therefore needs to be a point of emphasis for the Bears to protect. Because, you know, we've got decent corners. Getting beat on the outside hasn't been a thing for us this year. Hell, getting beat deep has only happened maybe, what, a couple of times this year. The throw to Sammy Watkins at the end of the Packers game is like this really the only one that I can think of as far as like throwing the ball 40-something plus yards downfield and them actually pulling it off. The Bears have not been susceptible to the big play, which means that part of the defense is working. But the zone and protecting the middle of the field has been an utter weakness for them, and it has killed us more times than not. Made us one of the worst third down defenses in all of the NFL. And, you know, it's really been killing us this year, especially during this last 4-week stretch where the offense is consistently putting points on the board and scoring enough to win any football game in the NFL, except, unfortunately, the one they're playing in. It's happened week after week since the Patriots win. So, we got to protect the middle of the field. It should be a point of emphasis for us this week against the Jets, especially with Mike White as the quarterback. And like I said, I'm going to keep saying it until they actually do it. Number two, it's been our death knell for the last 4 weeks, but eliminate the outside points. And by outside points, special teams, pick six, you know, that kind of thing. It's been a murder for the Bears, because the ironic thing about how the team has been playing is that each of the last 4 weeks, the Dolphins, three of the last 4 weeks, the Dolphins, the Lions, the Falcons, especially. I mean, obviously the Cowboys, we gave up 42 on defense, and then the fumble recovery scoop and score for the Cowboys made it 49. So obviously we didn't outscore what the defense allowed in that one. But against Miami, the defense only allowed 28 points. Against the Lions, the defense only allowed 24 points. And against the Falcons, the defense only allowed 20. And each week, it was the block punt on against the Dolphins. It was the pick six to Okuda against the Lions. And it was the kickoff return for Cordell Patterson against the Falcons that ended up being the deciding factor in the game. If those plays don't happen in any of those games, the Bears are on a 3-game winning streak. We're 6-4 and heavily in the discussion for the playoffs at this point. So, I mean, that's the difference right there. I mean, remember when we talked to Brian Miller about the Dolphins over the summer and talking about the year that they had, finishing 9-8, that 7-game losing streak that they had, that there were at least 3 games where one play changes that from a loss to a win. And then we're talking about, you know, 9-8 becoming 12-5, you know, them being maybe even division champs and things like that. And those are the games that they're winning this year. So hopefully this is a great learning experience for our team. And next year we figure out how to win these games. But it's you know, easier said than done, but still pretty easy at the same time. It's like, stop giving up points on special teams and allowing pick sixes and scoops and scores. And, the, you know, the defense won't have an uphill battle trying to defend against points it's got nothing to do with. So, yeah, I would like to see the Bears eliminate what I call the outside points this Sunday against the Jets. It's an offense that struggled mightily, but we'll see how they are with this new quarterback at the helm. And then I know you guys are thinking, I'm forgetting about the offensive line and protecting Justin Fields or Trevor Siemian or whoever our quarterback is, and you're wrong, because my third and final key is, in the passing game, get the ball out quickly, regardless of who the quarterback is. Whether it's Fields, especially if it's Fields, but whether it's Fields or the less athletic Trevor Siemian, you don't want those monsters to have the full 3 seconds to get to you, because they will get to you. So we got to get that ball out. Maybe some more anticipatory throws from Fields, kind of throwing them to a spot and throwing them open, as opposed to sitting back in the pocket waiting for somebody to get Ohio State Big Ten open, like he was used to in college. So he's got to have a quicker clock. He's got to have a faster trigger and get the ball out for the good of our offense and for the good of himself. I don't want him taking hits against these guys on Sunday. And as I said at the beginning of the show, in fact, I don't want him playing at all. At the very least, not this week. Maybe you could talk me into it next week against the Packers, because that's a game I want. But, I still would not hate it if he didn't play against for the rest of the year. I really wouldn't. So we'll see. So those are the keys. Go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thanks so much for joining us. Guys, come back on Monday when we will review Bears-Jets, see how it went. Did Justin Fields play? Did he finish the game in one piece? Is he worse off than he was going into the game? Did his presence help? Did it hurt? And so on. We'll come back and answer all those questions on Monday. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.